So let's do a quick review of what's going on, guys. Moses has led the people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. Okay. Incredible miracles have taken place, deliverance from slavery. They are camped now at the Mount of God. They're camped at Mount Sinai, and he's going to soon receive 10 commandments. Moses' father-in-law pays Moses a visit. He's traveled from Midian. That's somewhere between 10 and 30 miles away, or 16 to 48 kilometers away. And by the way, he's brought Moses' wife and sons who weren't in Egypt with him. And so they're catching up with each other. Moses is sharing all that God has done. Jethro is, and they're giving praise to God, and they sacrifice to God. They're eating a meal together. And the end. No, not quite. The next day, Jethro grabs his cup of coffee. He's walking around the camp. He smells the campfires. He sees his son-in-law. And Jethro is very proud of his son-in-law. He's up early working in the morning. He's working through lunch. He's working through dinner. He's working, 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 working all day, every day. And he shakes his head and he says, this is not good for Moses or the people. And he's thinking to himself, Moses is going to sink. Moses is going to drown. He needs to learn how to swim properly when it comes to ministry. And he's basically saying, I need to talk to the boy. I need to talk to him about life, and I need to talk to him about leadership. And so Jethro is a good lifeguard. He blows the whistle is what he does. And he says, you're doing it wrong and you need to do it better. And he says, let me show you the proper technique in swimming in ministry, because I want you to swim and not sink or drown. And if you learn these proper techniques in ministry, when it comes to swimming in ministry, you're going to be able to go farther and you're going to last longer and you're going to be able to breathe easier. And I hope that's what you're going to learn today, and I'm going to learn that we can go farther in ministry and we'll last longer in ministry and we'll be able to breathe easier in ministry. So Jethro talks to Moses. And as Jethro is talking to Moses, Jethro is talking to me. And Jethro is also talking to you, because I struggle in ministry at times. And you also struggle in ministry at times. And it's hard to keep our head above the waves. And sometimes we feel overwhelmed with these responsibilities and problems. And we're trying to gasp for air and breathe. And we're kind of like dog paddling as pastors and ministry leaders at times. And none of us wants to sink. So how do we not be overwhelmed in ministry? All right. Well, earlier we looked at some internal attitudes that need to change. Now we're going to transition into very practical externals, changes that we should make and can make in our lives. So read with me Jethro's swimming instructions. You ready? Exodus 18, starting in verse 19. Now listen to me. I'll give you some good advice, all right? Some advice. And God be with you. You be the one to represent the people before God and bring their cases to him. Instruct them about the statutes and laws and teach them the way to live and what they must do. But you should select from all the people able men, God-fearing, trustworthy, and hating dishonest profit. Place them above the people as commanders of thousands, hundreds, fifties, tens. They should judge the people at all times. Then they can bring you every major case, but judge every minor case themselves. In this way, you will lighten your load and they will bear it with you. If you do this and God so directs you, you will be able to endure. And also all these people will be able to go home satisfied. All right, so help for those overwhelmed in ministry when it all doesn't seem good enough. Here's the fifth one. Educate. Educate. If you want to swim and not sink, you got to educate. Who do you need to educate? First yourself. Okay? Educate yourself by listening and learning. And we've been talking about that. And we've learned this earlier, listening to outside objective opinions, listening and learning. And we saw this verse earlier, Proverbs 12, a fool's way is right in his own eyes. Whoever listens to counsel is wise. So let's be wise. And I would encourage you, continue to learn and continue to listen. As you guys heard, I do a lot of running. I listen to podcasts on my run about ministry. I'm listening to a series on how to preach right now from a guy from the 1960s who's been dead for 20 years. I'm constantly listening to podcasts or sermons by people doing what we're doing right now, masterclass. Continue to do these things. You know, I just grow. You know, you've heard readers are leaders. Well, listeners are leaders as well. And then he says, God be with you, is what he tells him. Listen to me, I'll be give you some advice, and God be with you, okay? And I love this because it gives us an insight into Jethro. God be with you, Moses. Does you know what that says? I want God's best in your life, Moses. I want God's wisdom in your life. That's who we need to listen to. People who really want God's best for us. There'll be people who criticize your ministry, but you'll be able to discern people who really love you, who really care for you, who really want God's best for you. God be with you, Moses. God be with you as you listen to these words today based on Exodus 18. And Jethro tells Moses, don't stop doing what you're doing, just refine the process. You don't have to totally stop what you're doing and give up and quit and be mad that somebody talked to you. No, just refine the process is what we want here. And I love the fact that Moses is speaking God's best, or Jethro is speaking God's best into Moses' life. And that's what we want to do with each other. Speak God's best into one another's life. You don't need to quit. Just work smarter, not harder. So educate yourself. Educate others. Look at verse 20. Instruct them about the statutes and the laws. Teach them the way to live and what they must do. So he says, teach and make known. Instruct them. Instruct them on the commandments. Okay, so this is what he's saying right here. He's saying, I want you to teach them the way to live vertically with God. Okay? You teach them about their relationship with God, and also teach them how to live horizontally with one another, their relationship with one another. I mean, that's what we do in ministry. We're teaching people how to have a right relationship with God. We're teaching people how to have a right relationship with one another. All right? And basically, this is what Jethro is saying. Handle disputes, but limit disputes. What do I mean by that? Handle disputes, but limit disputes. So he's saying it takes both. I want you, Moses, to listen to things that come in and handle it. Handle disputes reactively. Hear their cases and settle their cases. We do that in ministry. People come to us with their problems, and we help them with their problems. But then he also says, but limit the disputes proactively, so that there's less problems to deal with. How do you do that? By training up others. So Moses, I want you to handle disputes, but I want you to limit disputes. Keep handling some of the disputes, but you're going to limit them as you train up others to serve alongside of you. So it's balancing this life and work. This is what he's saying. Put out the present fires and prevent future fires. Put out the present problems. You're going to have to deal with some present problems, but you're also going to need to prevent future problems. We're always going to have fires to put out in ministry, things that spring up, problems we got to deal with. But wouldn't it be nice if we had less problems in ministry? Wouldn't it be nice if we could limit the problems in ministry by letting other people deal with them? So in other words, teach other people, Moses. That's what he's saying. Teach them. Teach them, yes, not to play with matches. Teach them how to live right with God. But there's more than just knowing and understanding God's word, okay? The more they know and understand God's word, I should say, this is important, the less they're going to mess up. We have to make sure we are teaching God's word and teaching it well to God's people. And then they'll depend less on us to fix their messes, less headaches. Benjamin Franklin, who was a founding father in America, put it this way. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Well, what does that mean? It just basically means this. It's easier to prevent damage than repair damage. It's easier to prevent damage than repair damage. Just a little bit of wise prevention goes a long way. So if we can teach people the word of God, teach it well, give them the wisdom they need, it's going to serve them well in life, and it'll prevent more problems and us dealing with more problems. That's the first thing. So help those overwhelmed in ministry. When your all doesn't seem good enough, educate yourself and others. Here's the next one. Delegate. It's all about divide and conquer. Look at verse 21 of Exodus 18. You should select from all the people, able men, God-fearing, trustworthy, hating dishonest profit. Place them over the people as commanders of thousands, hundreds, fifties, and ten. I want you to notice the first thing is select them. Select the people you serve with. Select the people you swim with, so to speak. Okay? And so right now he's going beyond education to organization. You have got to have structures in place in your ministries. You've got to have systems in place. You've got to have organization and administration. And this may not be your strength. Can I tell you something? It's not my strength. I am not gifted administratively. I am not gifted in organization. Well, how in the world do I do ministry? I delegate it. I give it to volunteers and other staff people who are so much better. I'm a visionary. I can see where we need to go, but I don't know how to get there. I don't know the steps that need to take place. And so I've got to have people around me, and they're fantastic and they're wonderful. So raise up leaders around you, find volunteers in your organization. If you're able to hire somebody, any and all of those things, delegate to people who have strengths that you don't have. And where does your church ministry, where does your parachurch organization need this? Maybe it's in the area of assimilation, you need organization. Discipleship, you need organization. How do we disciple people in our church? Maybe it's children's ministry, or it's outreach, or it's all the above, it could be. Organization brings order out of chaos. And maybe some of your ministries right now are a little chaotic. You don't know what they're doing, where they're going. You need organization. Maybe it starts with organizing your calendar with events. And by the way, one of the things I do to help me stay organized is I don't take appointments on Thursday and Friday. No. Calendar is cleared Thursday and Friday for me, because those are main study days for me. But organization is kind of like the skeleton for the body. You have a skeleton in your body right now, okay? And it enables movement and it enables function. If you didn't have a skeleton, if there was no organizational skeleton, you would just be a blob, okay? That's what we would be. Unfortunately, some of our churches and some of our ministries are more like a blob. This skeleton system's just not there. And we have got to have organization and administration in place. And if the organization is not there for your church or your ministry, the movement of your church and ministry forward is going to struggle. And life and work is going to be frustrating. And things are just going to pile up. And it's going to suffocate you underneath the load. And so you've got to have structure and you've got to be selective. Look at verse 21. You should select from all the people. So he's saying there's comes times when you have to be very selective of who should be doing what. My wife, when she goes to the grocery store, and maybe your wives or you do the shopping, my wife is very picky. She's picky when she picks fruit. I mean, she's going to pick it up. She's going to look at it. She's going to squeeze it, see what it's like. She doesn't just care, just grab. If I go to the grocery store, I just grab something. I need to be more selective. Jethro's telling Moses, you got to be selective here. Be careful when picking people to serve. Be careful when hiring somebody into your organization. Be careful when selecting an individual. Some of the worst decisions I've made as a pastor is hiring the wrong people or recruiting the wrong volunteers. Because you give something to somebody and then the whole thing falls apart, or they take it in a wrong direction, or they overpromised, or you didn't check their references, or you find out they can't do the job anyway. You got to have the right people in the right areas. One of the things we do as a church that has very much helped us when it comes to volunteers overseeing ministries is we require pretty much everybody to do a spiritual gift analysis. And then we have a person who's a volunteer coordinator who meets with them. We have everybody take an online spiritual gift test. We encourage this with everybody in our church. Sometimes I'll say something from the pulpit. If I encourage people to serve, I'll say, and by the way, you may not know where to serve. We have an online spiritual gift you can take. And we just got one off the internet, and that's the one we use. And then the person who follows up with them after they take it, they get an email back, our volunteer coordinator. And then she schedules a meeting with them and says, hey, I'd love to sit down with you and talk about the different ministries we have here at the church. And I see these are your spiritual gifts, and we think you could plug into these areas. We want people serving in our church in their area of giftedness. And it's been very, very helpful. I want you to notice something about King Saul. King Saul did a lot of things wrong. Here's one thing King Saul did that was right. 1 Samuel 14. The conflict with the Philistines was fierce all Saul's days. So whenever Saul noticed any strong or valiant man, he enlisted him. He went ahead and grabbed everybody he could that was strong, and he put him on his army, in his force. Man, you see somebody in your church who's gifted, grab them, recruit them into a certain area. Get in the habit of picking up good people for ministry. It's the difference between victory and defeat, success and failure. And again, recruit new guests. I shared earlier in the Q&A time, question and answer time. Man, somebody comes into your church, recruit them. They're brand new. Get to know them. Find out where they're gifted. Tell them where you'd like to see your church, where you'd like to see your ministry organization go, and cast that vision for them. We want qualified individuals, the right people in the right positions, who are able to do the job and handle the responsibility, smart enough to understand, strong enough to handle the load. They have the talent and the gifts. And by the way, this doesn't mean necessarily your family or your friends or some political connection. Please be careful of not just grabbing a friend because they're a friend and, hey, would you do this for me? They may be the wrong person, or just grabbing a family member because they're a family member and you need somebody to do it. That may not be their gift. So please be careful. It may be a short-term remedy, and you can tell them that, hey, listen, I just need you to do this for 1 month, or I just need you to do this for 2 weeks. That may be a short-term solution, but you really need to find the long-term person to fill in there. You know, I would ask this question. The person who sings in your church, should they? Are they able to sing, or they just wanted to sing? The person who greets in your church, are they gifted in the area of hospitality? Or are they the wrong person greeting people because they're scared of people and they never say anything to anybody? The person who teaches a Sunday school class or a small group in your church, are they gifted in teaching? Or are they not gifted in teaching? We've got to be real careful, is what we've got to do here. I want you to notice what he says here. He says, the people that he was told to recruit for in verse 21, able men, God-fearing, trustworthy, hating, dishonest prophet. So he said, I want people who fear God. I don't want people who fear man. I don't want people who are man-pleasers. I want somebody who has courage. They have a backbone, spiritually minded, God pleasers. He says they need to be truthful. You want people who are truthful, trustworthy. You never have to question their honesty, never have to question their integrity. They hate dishonest gain. They're not greedy. Yeah, that's who you want in there. And here's the selection criteria that we use at our church. And I mentioned this earlier. We have these six C's that we use especially for our staff and we use for our oversight team. Here's the first one, character. So we look for people of godly character, integrity, okay? That's who they are. And for a pastor position, it's 1 Timothy and Titus right there. For a deacon, it's Acts chapter 6. We have this right here in Exodus 18. So they're people of character. The next one is competency. They're gifted in that area, meaning they're competent to do the job. Proven leadership and spiritual discernment. Now, no one is perfect, but you see potential in them to do it. The right fit. Okay, commitment is the next one. They're going to follow through. They have a good track record of faithfulness. They've proven themselves. That's who we want. Capacity, that means growth potential. They have the ability to grow and expand. And maybe they have a high level of multiple skill sets. They can do a lot of different things and do it well. You know, they have the ability to carry weight and responsibility. Chemistry, I cannot tell you the importance of this one. Chemistry means it's a good fit. They fit well with the team. They may be an individual thinker. That's great. But they're a team player. You want team players who are going to strive for unity in matters of disagreement. Just recently in our church, we had an individual who was incredibly gifted. So gifted in so many ways. But this person was not good with people. It was kind of like abrasive. And so we had to tell that person, you can't be on the team anymore. And we went through all kinds of steps and proper steps to encourage them and talk to them. And it just didn't work out because chemistry has to be there. Here's the next one is calling. You really want someone who feels called to do it. Man, I want to be a part of this team. I really do. And kind of that's kind of how I feel about the European Leadership Forum. I love it. I love the fact that I don't get paid anything, that I just get to volunteer my time, that I get to pour my life into other ministry leaders. I love pastors. I love people in ministry. So, because that's who I am, I'm in ministry. So anything I can do, I feel called to do this. Well, that's who you want in your church. That's who you want in those areas. You want people that have a joy, they have a burden, they have a passion, they feel called to do it. So just by way of review, godly, that's character, gifted, that's competency, guarantee, that's commitment, growth potential, capacity, they're a great fit, that's chemistry, and God's hand is on them. That's their calling. And let me just give you three other C's while we're talking about this. These are kind of bonuses. If someone is a good communicator, that's really good. Communication. They're good at letting people know what's going on, sending emails out, whatever, letting people know. If they're compassionate, that's another one. You know, they care for people. They're sensitive. And another bonus one is creative. If they're willing to think outside the box, be creative, I think that's good too. So Jethro says, select them. And now he says, place them. Look what he says here. Place these over them as leaders of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, of tens. So he's saying, Moses, divide and conquer. You want leaders of thousands and leaders of hundreds and leaders of fifties and leaders of tens. John Haywood, an English author, put it this way. Many hands make light work. Many hands make light work. Well-known evangelist here in America yesteryear, 1800s, D.L. Moody, I'd rather put 1,000 men to work than do the work of 1,000 men. I'd rather put 1,000 men to work than do the work of 1,000 men. Put more people to work and be strategic and wise. Be strategic and wise because some people can handle more than other people. It's kind of like seeing your ministry, seeing your church, seeing your organization as a chessboard. And there's different pieces, different people. And this is nothing against them. Some of the people are pawns. Some of them are bishops. Some are rooks. Some are knights. People can do different moves. People are gifted different ways. And so look at your ministry as a chessboard. having the right people in the right position to make the right moves so that everybody can win in ministry. All right. And here it is. Make sure the right people are in the right place doing the right thing. Bob Beal, who is a very gifted leader. So be strategic and be wise and maximize. I want to say this. Maximize people's giftedness and talent. Maximize people's knowledge and skill. What do I mean by this? This is very important when it comes to your organization and your ministry. Some of us will have a 10 talent person handling a 1,000 talent job. Well, if you have a guy who's only a 10 talent person and you've given him a 1,000 talent job, he's over his head. You are going to burn him out. He's going to hold things up. He's going to totally feel like a failure in ministry because nothing's working well because he can't do the job. The other thing we've got to be careful of is some of us have a 1,000 talent person and you've given them a 10 talent job. And so they're just going to feel like this is a waste of my time. I can handle a whole lot more than this. And they're going to feel like we're selling them short and we are not utilizing them to their full potential. And so we have those two types of people. And then sometimes we have a person who shouldn't be handling anything. And I'm going to speak to that in just a moment. All right. But leaders need to be willing to have difficult conversations. Please get this. You have got to be willing to have a difficult conversation if you're a leader, or you should not be in leadership. Leadership has difficult conversations. It's part of being a leader. Okay. If you're in church ministry, you're going to have to talk to parents about their kids. You're going to have to talk to that volunteer about a job you thought they were doing, they're not doing. A deacon, or you're going to have to confront a woman who's been gossiping and slandering on social media or in some other area. A staff member who's not been pulling their weight. Leaders are required to have difficult conversations. And if you're not willing to have difficult conversations, you're not a leader. You're not a good leader. And you may not even need to be in leadership. You have to be willing to have difficult conversations. And we've got to be willing to hurt people's feelings at times. Not just to hurt people, but to help people, to help them grow, to help them mature so that they can find the right place to serve. And this is a crucial passage that I think helps us have the right spirit with people when we have to have a difficult conversation. These were the Apostle Paul's words to Timothy, who was in ministry. Don't rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father, younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and the younger women as sisters with all purity. This will save you and save me from being overly critical, from having a wrong attitude. If I have to confront an older man about a sin issue or about a leadership issue, I have to remember to treat him like I would my own dad. It just kind of takes the edge off the words. If I have the attitude, I'm going to talk to my dad right now. I'm going to talk to him a whole lot more gently and more carefully. If it's an older woman, you approach her as you would your own mom. How would you talk to your mom about something you had to talk to her about that was an issue? You'd be very careful. Or if it is a younger man, just don't write him off and be critical. No, treat him like you would your little brother. Or a younger woman, like she was your little sister. Because sometimes we have to have difficult conversations, but our attitudes have to be right and godly. And now let's be honest. Sometimes when it comes to ministry, we delegate to the wrong person, or we have inherited the wrong people. We come into a church, we come into an organization, and we have people around us that maybe are in the wrong positions. So what do we do when that happens? This is when I'm going to give you some options, like we talked about in that Q&A time before. Okay, here's option number one. Mentor them and meet with them. You have the wrong person in the wrong position. or they're just not doing the job. Mentor them, meet with them, follow up with them, set up meetings with them, and do some training. Say, hey, I'd like to offer you some training, and you can do the training. Okay. And here's the Spiritual Gift website. This is the one that we use at harvest.church/serve. And so say, hey, I'd like you to take a spiritual gift survey. I'd like to see your areas of giftedness so that we can get the maximum potential blessing out of you and that you'll be blessed as well. So mentor and meet with them is one option. Here's another one. Someone's not following through. Support them. Instead of just sitting back and saying, oh, they're not doing the job, and talking to a coworker, they're not doing their job, and support them so they don't feel like they're abandoned. Ask questions. Ask them, hey, how is this ministry going? Hey, how's that Sunday school class going? What are the struggles that you're facing? How can I help you? Just simply asking them. So mentoring and meeting with them, supporting them in their role. Here's a third one. Have them shadow you or shadow another person. Have them follow you around. You do the job so that they can understand how to do it right, so that they can learn from you. So you've been doing this ministry and you've been doing it well, but you're overwhelmed and you need to hand it to somebody else. So you recruit them and say, I'd like you to do it with me, and show them how to do it. Do it for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or a month or whatever it is, so that they can see exactly what you're talking about, and then hand it off to them. So you may say, okay, Scott, I have somebody in a ministry position who's not doing the job well, and I have met with them, and I have mentored them, and I have supported them, and I have had them shadow me, and they still can't do the job. What should I do? You've got to remove them, is what you've got to do. Again, leadership has to make tough decisions sometimes. So how do you remove somebody from a ministry position? All right? How do you fire, so to speak, a faithful employee or a faithful volunteer? This is gold, in my opinion. This is by Bob Beal. The information I'm going to give you right now is from Bob Beal. And this is how you fire a faithful employee. How do you give them a pink slip, or in Germany, a blue letter? How do you let go a volunteer? You utilize this star. See the words? Honest, care, strength, stress, and fair. And let me explain those five words to you. You can start with any of those words that are on your screen right now. And please get the idea behind this. The whole idea is to shepherd these people and care for these people, not just get rid of them. The whole idea behind this is to mentor others and help others to position them where they need to be. The whole idea is to realign people where they need to be. So this is not about being mean. This is not about getting rid of somebody. This is about helping someone grow and be shepherded and mentored to where they need to be. It's the golden rule, Matthew 7:12. Therefore, whatever you want others to do for you, do also the same for them. For this is the law and the prophets. So if I am not doing the job and someone needs to talk to me, how would I want them to approach me? That's how I need to approach them. So let's go back to the star. I'm going to walk you through very practically how you let go of someone who's in a ministry position that shouldn't be there. You can start with the word care. Let's just start with care. I just want to, and you address them, Jennifer or Sally or Ramon or whatever their name is. Listen, I just want to let you know I care for you. And I care too much to not talk to you. And then you can go to honest. And you know what? This isn't easy for me, but I just want to be honest with you about something. And then you talk about fair. If you want to start there or you want to go there. To be fair to you, I just want to let you know what you're doing right now in the church, it just isn't the best fit. What you're doing in the organization, it's just not the best fit. And let's go to strengths as the next word. I want you to know you have tremendous strengths. And these are the things that I think you do well. And you tell them that, all right? List them out. and see where God has blessed them, and they're good with people, or they're good with organization, or whatever it is. Or you start with the word stress, or you go to the word stress, because they're under stress. If they are a 10-talent person trying to do a 1,000-talent job, they're under stress. And you can tell them that. I know you're under stress. I know you're frustrated. Maybe they've even voiced that to you. And you tell them, and let's find you the proper fit. Let's get you aligned with where you need to be. And you can start on any of those words. You can start with strengths. Joe, I think you got great strengths. Let me tell you what they are. I don't think what you're doing right now is one of your strengths. And I just want to be honest with you because it's not fair to you. And you know what? I care for you and I see you are under stress. Or you start with stress. You know what, Jennifer? I see you're under a lot of stress. I'm sorry about that. And I want to be fair to you and I'm going to be honest with you. And these are your strengths and I care about you. Let's get you where you need to be. You know, so you can start with any of those words, whatever you think is best. But I think it really works well in helping get the person to where they need to be. All right. Here's the next one. Help for those overwhelmed in ministry. Educate, delegate, empower. What does that mean? Let leaders lead. Let them lead. Look at verse 21 of Exodus 18. Place them over the people as commanders of thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens, and they should judge the people at all times. Let me give you a great quote by Greg Crochelle. If you delegate tasks, you create followers. If you delegate authority, you create leaders. So it's not just placing them, it's letting them run with the ministry, letting them be creative with it, letting them make it their own. That's what we want. And of course, you can talk to them, you see something maybe they could improve, you have a conversation with them, but man, let them run with it. Because to empower them is to trust them. To empower them is to trust them. See, selecting them and placing them is one thing. Trusting them is another. The church selected me many years ago as their pastor, and they entrust me with the ministry I have. The leaders in my church are not picking out what I'm to preach every week. Oh, that would just be handcuffing to me. So we've got to make sure we're trusting other leaders to lead. Good leaders let leaders lead. I'll say that again. Good leaders let leaders lead. Let your staff lead. Let your volunteers lead. Let your coworkers lead. I met with a deacon in our church. He had a desire for a prayer ministry, and so I talked to him about that prayer ministry. I gave him my ideas. Man, I just let him run with it. It's his ministry. He's in charge of it, delegated the authority to do it. And I may follow up with him, and that's fine. Here's an important lesson. If you don't let leaders lead, you will lose your leaders. If you do not let them lead, you're going to lose your leaders. If I started doing like all of this technology stuff that's set up for me to meet with you guys today, I didn't do any of this. I'm not good at it. I would have been in the wrong position. But if I would have gotten in the way of Eric, who set all this up and said, no, I want to do this and I want to do this, man, I would have been doing him a disservice. And honestly, he's not going to want to do this anymore. And I'm afraid some of us in ministry, we're losing leaders because we won't let leaders lead. Stay in your lane, remember? Stay in your lane. Stop veering into other people's ministry lanes. And some of us are losing leaders because we're not letting them lead, and we're doing more interfering in their lives instead of supporting them in their lives. Good leaders don't like to serve under poor leaders. Good leaders don't like to serve under poor leaders. So if you have a guy come into your church or your organization, and his leadership level is at like an 8 out of 10, and your leadership level is like at a 3 or 4, he's not going to want to stay in your church. He's not going to want to stay serve with you, because you're just not understanding leadership. You need to grow in your leadership, and I need to grow in my leadership, or we're going to lose these other people. So equip the people, empower the people, because work is accomplished by the people. And I would just want to say this. Maybe somebody has come to your mind right now who's a leader in your church or organization that you've just recently lost, or you might be losing because you haven't let them lead. I would encourage you just to be humble with them and apologize. I would say, go to that person and say, you know what? I've been too controlling. I've been micromanaging. I haven't given you the authority just to run with this worship ministry. I haven't let you run with the youth ministry. I haven't let you run with that organizational ministry. Would you forgive me? I'm trying to learn to be a better leader. Oh, if you do that, that will go so far, that humility. So I would just encourage you, if you've stepped out of your lane, so to speak, go to that person and just apologize and just say, hey, would you pray for me? I'm trying to learn to do a better job. Ephesians 4 is a good reminder. He himself gave some as apostles, some as prophets, some as evangelists, some as pastors, some as teachers. Why? Verse 12, to equip the saints for the work of ministry, to build up the body of Christ. Christian leader, Christian pastor, you are not supposed to do it all. God says so. You equip the people, let them do it. And again, John Maxwell, it's the law of empowerment is what he calls it. The law of empowerment. And it's okay if others are better than us. That's great. God has gifted them in different ways. They have a place in the church. They're needed and they need to be appreciated.